In working with one of my colleagues, she and her students were exploring the fact that they felt like vulnerable had been sort of co-opted and transformed, transmuted into this, I'm sharing everything I have with you, almost as a power move. Not trying to be, not, that wasn't the goal of it. It was like, I am really going to share everything with you in this new world, this new dynamic of, we want authentic leadership. We want to be transparent. We need to understand what's going on. Vulnerable is a tool that like grew in ways that I and transmuted into ways that maybe are not as helpful. So this colleague and friend of mine was saying, we've been exploring the term available. And I just latched on and went, oh, it, you know, when you hear a reframing, you, your whole company's about reframing. So when there's a reframing that you're like, oh, yes, that's a reframe I can grab onto.
You've landed inside Launch Street, the business innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Aero Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hey, everybody. Tamara here at another great episode of Inside Launch Street. So before we dig in, a lot of people ask me where I get my design work done, where I do my social media posts, kind of all of the design and marketing materials that I create. They always tell me, Tamara, I love your design aesthetic. How do you do it? All right, I got a little secret for you that some of us know, but I think it makes design super easy and efficient, and that is something called Canva. Canva.com. It's an app. We use the website because we're doing it at our desks. Go check it out. Here's the thing. They have all the templates for all the different types of things you could possibly want. Email headers, Instagram posts, infographics, PowerPoint presentation designs. We use them for everything. We use all their templates and then we adjust them to match our brand colors and our visuals. But the reason our design looks so good is, trust me, not because of anything I'm doing. In fact, if you put me in front of Photoshop or anything else, it'd be a hot mess. It's because we use Canva for any material that goes out. All of our workbooks that we send to clients and to our academy members, all of it starts with Canva. So if you're looking for an efficient, effective, and affordable way to do any type of design work in your business, whether that's internal documents or stuff that's going out to the world, could not recommend Canva more. Go check them out. Absolutely could not run my business without their help. Okay, on to today's podcast. So I'm interviewing someone who, it's interesting, I've actually known her for a long time. And she and I were in a Clubhouse panel the other day. And she said something that just made my eyes go wide. You know, one of those moments where someone says something that makes you go, oh, I never thought of it that way. She was talking about the downside of vulnerability and the distinction between vulnerability and availability and how that impacts your confidence, your team's ability to collaborate, and of course, your ability to innovate both individually and as a team. So I brought her on Inside Launch Street to help me understand the distinction so that I could put the distinction in your lap, but also the control back in your lap. You know, there's a lot of conversation around vulnerability. But as Hillary points out, there's also a lot of pressure to be vulnerable in times where maybe we don't want to or don't need to. It's like vulnerability has become the new kind of, you know, brand badge to wear. But she really breaks it down in a way that I think gives us back a sense of control, but also improves, like I said, our confidence and our innovation, our collaboration, all of that. This is a deep down personal interview, but I know it's going to help a lot of us. In fact, the Academy members that got to listen in and ask questions as part of their membership, they really got a lot out of this. So I know you will too. Enjoy. Hey, everybody. Tamara here with Inside Launch Street. So I'm super excited for today's podcast for a couple reasons. First of all, I've known Hillary forever and she's amazing and insightful. And I think, very real, which is one of the things I love about her, which actually leads me to why I asked her to be on this podcast. So we were in a clubhouse room, I think, where we were. And we were chatting about vulnerability. Someone brought up vulnerability. And Hillary brought up something that I thought was really important. And it was a little bit of the part of vulnerability that we don't talk about, which is, I think, the pressures of it and the challenges with it and how we even navigate that in the realm of how we do our work, how we communicate, how we are a team. And it's one of those words that I think, like innovation, gets thrown around a lot, but nobody really knows what it means. or everybody has a different definition, I should say, based on their own experience, which is fine. But Hillary had dug into this, and she's got a distinction that I thought was really powerful when I heard it, and helped me set up some really healthy boundaries that I think actually with my team helped me help all of us lead stronger, but also actually innovate more because we knew some lines that we didn't have before in a good way. So I'm going to leave it at that because I want Hillary to share the rest. So Hillary, welcome. For those of you who don't know you, tell us a little bit about who you are.
I am a communication obsessed former actor, now running my own company, working on that human connection, specifically executive presence, but executive presence being that big bucket of one-on-one, teams, facilitation, storytelling, all of that. How do we show up being present? How do we be seen and be heard? And we do it from the discipline and the techniques of the performing arts, which is what my background is in. So I have a master's in performing arts, and I am fascinated by humans and how we do and don't connect.
Aren't we fascinating in so many ways? I have to tell you, I feel like, I'm glad you said that because I'm veering off track a little bit here, which happens quite a bit in my podcast, but I think we totally underestimate our own brain and what it's capable of. And I see it all the time in innovation. But you probably see it all the time too. And like all the emotional stuff that gets attached to how we show up, our confidence, our presence, how we communicate, how we lead. I mean, we're just so layered compared to other species.
Yes. And all those, when you mention innovation has different interpretations and thrown around in blanket terms, confidence does, communication does, presence does, all of these terms we're using to try and explain why we do and don't connect. And I don't know if there's always the right answer to it. We are complicated. So that's why I dive in. And honestly, you need to know that I dive in because if you met my family, you'd go, now I know why she's studying communication.
There's a lot to unpack there, as they'd say, right? Isn't that the new catchphrase?
All the time. And to your point of like that I don't ever say that we teach communication. Mm-hmm. We don't. We help clear the cobwebs out for people. We help people get to their own essence. We're helping people get out of their own way because we all know how to communicate. We've just put stuff in the way of that.
Oh, I love the way you said that. It kind of goes to that whole, like all the baggage, the layers, good and bad.
Yeah.
Part of the reason I wanted to have this conversation is I think in order to innovate, we all have the ability. So our brains all have the ability to be innovators. We all have the structure for innovation, but we don't all use it. But I think in order to do that, particularly in a workplace, you have to put a little bit more of yourself out there. You have to be willing to take some risks emotionally, not just the idea. And like, we could lose money on this, but like, I've got to be willing to put something out there. So before we dig in though, because one of my favorite questions in the effort to get to know each other is, and I've known you for a while, so I'm really looking forward to this one. What's one thing about you that would surprise us? A hobby, a passion, whatever.
I landed a job by telling the true story of my arm up inside of a U, straightening out legs in order to get the one lamb out, to get to the second lamb. The second lamb coming out was not breathing. Take the lamb, swinging the lamb around my head by its hind legs to expel fluid from its lungs. So I was part of what was considered called lamb drop. So I was part of a lambing crew in Montana.
Oh my gosh. I got to be honest with you. You were talking and I was like, this is what I heard for a minute there. Wah, 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 wah. I was like, I'm not sure what she's saying or what she's talking about here.
Sheep ranch.
For me.
Sheep ranch, lambs, helping them breathe. All good. You got to, you know, swing them around your head when their lungs are full of fluid and centrifugal force. I had so much fun on the ranch in Montana being on the Lambing crew as the total New England, totally out of her element human being.
So I have to, on a quick side note, and then I'm going to dig in. I have to tell you, my man has a ranch and I have enjoyed nothing more than feeding cows and fixing fences. And like, it's amazing how rewarding that physical work yes. is. And we've gotten away from that, I think, in life. And like I'm on, this is my world right here. This is it. So like in front of a computer, this is my little space.
This is my box.
Right. This is my box. So speaking of boxes, let's dig in. I think you hinted at it earlier when you talked about the cobwebs in the way, but it feels like in today's world, and especially now that we are, well, there's a couple of things going on, not to get like overly into kind of world politics and all that, but we're disconnected both because of opinions, but also because of this virtual world, because we're staying 6 feet away from each other, like technology. But so it feels like kind of real connection and communication is being lost. Yes. And I'm curious, particularly in the workplace, how you see it. And I think most importantly, what you see those consequences of it are.
Couple things that got mentioned even this morning on a team meeting. We were discussing the polarization happening in the world. And because it's happening on so many different topics and on so many different areas, I feel like it's polarization like in a prism, like it's so many different ones, not just one. You just can't move without hitting one of the polarizations. And how do we talk about anything really without someone going, excuse me, wait a minute. And I invite that. We want to invite people to enlighten us about language and language use. And it also makes it a tad tricky. That trickiness, I'm seeing the weight of it in the business realm, in that weight of what should I say, what can I say, what I want to say, what will further this, what will destroy this. And so in addition to that, the weight of like what is correct or not correct to say, or what will further this. The other thing I'm finding in my journey is that it is shifting all the time. So I feel last week, there was a big shift in the teams I was working with. They were heavier, they were tired. And yeah. I was working with one group and one of them even mentioned, they said, I saw two people who never have any emotion. We use emotion like it's a negative thing. Heightened maybe anger emotion around something someone said. And I saw it happen. They wouldn't normally go there. We seem to be on edge. So people seem to be either walling others out or going in for the engagement, which is really sometimes another way of walling people out, right? Keeping them at bay with that. So that, and I feel like it's changing. We've been here a year now, and I taught virtual for years before this. Just I used to consider myself a virtual expert because I come from the voiceover world. So I had been training for 7 years, and I've been using Zoom and all that on how do you run virtual meetings. I do not consider myself an expert anymore. I think it's so hard to keep up with everything and what's going on. I think I'm a veteran of it, right? Familiar with it. So that is, I just think it's shifting all the time tomorrow. And I just think it's,
There's a couple of things you said that I think I just want to dig into a little bit because I think they're important. And I've been hearing similar things. It's funny, Hillary, because a lot like you, I've been doing virtual work for a long time. We've had online platforms, we have technology basis like things that we deliver. So that's not new, but it's definitely different now than it was when I started doing it. Yeah. But there's a couple of things that you said. So one is, you know, you said people are exhausted or like maybe they're more emotionally on edge. It's interesting. What's interesting about that to me is I'm seeing it with my clients too. And with the people in our academy, they're like, the conversation is about energy, exhaustion, overwhelm, right? And getting through that so they can get to a space of seeing the opportunities and solving the problems, but they can't even get there because they're so tired. And I'm saying that very generally. That's not about anyone in particular. But what's interesting about that to me is we're also, I don't want to say at the end, because I think things are changing permanently, but the light is at the end of is here, right? Like we have some relief, but I think it's a little bit like, I don't have any other great analogy for this, but I wanted to get your perspective on it. I feel like it's like when I take a day off exercise. So I work super hard for 6 days, right? 2 hours a day, I'm crushing it. And then my day off, instead of being energized because I'm not working out, I'm exhausted all day. Like my body feels relief, but it's like, do you know what I'm trying to say? Like it's like builds up. And then my body is like, oh my God, I'm so tired. When I'm thinking,
I'm not working out, so I should have more energy because I'm not expending all this energy. Yeah. But it's like a buildup that then I think explodes when you have a break. So circles, but I'd love to get your opinion on that, because that's where I think we are. And that's why I think communication is hard, because I think we're holding dual feelings. On one hand, we're exhausted, we're overwhelmed, we've been dealing with things, and those changes and those new challenges are not going to go away. We've got to deal with it. They're here to stay. And there's hope. So like, where am I supposed to be in all this? You know?
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that analogy with the exhaustion on a Sunday from pushing. And now, we see relief. Maybe there is that. Right, okay. Right. We see an end in sight before we're kind of bucking up. And how long has this been going on? The exhaustion, there are some well-documented physiological things happening that make it tiring for us as human beings, looking forward all the time, not having that periphery view, why it's important to look side to side from time to time for our brains, and back-to-back meetings, like meetings, there's no passing time. When I came on, I was ready for the chat. We start at the top of the hour and you got on. You're like, hey, how are you? I was like, oh my gosh. Wow. I like took a little like, because what's been happening is that respect of the hour and respecting people's time and starting meetings on time. You started the meeting on time, but the start of the meeting was us connecting. That was great. Now I've been suggesting that people meet at the top of the hour and have 10 minutes where they actually do the work they were supposed to do to get prepped for the meeting because they never had time to prep for it. Yeah. So just have a silent 10 while we get ready for this meeting that we were going to have.
Well, I like that.
The other thing I was thinking is that my mother always called, I need a change of brain slides, meaning I just need to we are not doing that. And with you, that letdown. That letdown of exhaustion, I'm thinking, I'm seeing this. It's connected in the way for me is like, And you're kind of still in the same space, right? You're not even going a lot of places. When we get to go out, drive, get to a meeting, walk down a hall, right? We're not doing any of that. Yeah. So I would say yes to the fact that obviously multiple things just intruded my brain when you were talking about that. And yes to the fact that I think we're seeing perhaps the light at the end of the tunnel, or hoping it's the light at the end of the tunnel, and we're not putting as much effort in anymore.
Yeah. Well, we're over it, right? Like one of the conversations I was having with someone is they were frustrated because their people stopped putting their video on Zoom because they're like, I don't want it on. Like, I just don't want it. Like, it wasn't even a good reason. It was just, I don't want it on.
No, don't want it. Done.
We're out. Mic drop. We're out. So I want to dig into vulnerability. And I think you said availability, right?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. As I was saying earlier, I think that putting yourself out there, being willing to be a little bit more exposed in your thinking is important to innovation, because we can't move forward if we're not. Those things that are in our head need to get out.
Yep.
Or we need to talk to the person who's always a no, or we need to be willing to put ourselves and our own ideas out there when we think the group's not going to agree. But part of the thing I think, and you really highlighted this when we were doing that panel the other day, is that that's also really overwhelming and exhausting in a different way.
Yes.
And there's a lot of conversation around vulnerability, which is awesome in the sense that we're allowing it in a time in the professional life anyway, where it wasn't allowed before. But then I'm also like, I'm kind of over here, Hillary, going, well, how much do I have to share? And I'm exhausted and I just want to do my work right now. And I don't want to be vulnerable. Like, that's all the stuff going through my head. And what does it mean to be vulnerable? Do I have to share about my surgery in January? Is that vulnerable? Or just that my kids are outside right now, stuck in the street, and I'm letting them like flounder. Right. Is that vulnerable? Like,
Or is that transparency?
Right.
Right.
And I'm a person who you've known me long enough. Like, if you ran into me in a speaker's meeting, as you have many times, like I wear everything on my sleeve. So if you ask me, I will tell you, and I have no shame about any of it. But that's true for everybody. So will you dig into kind of what's happened with vulnerability? Let's start there. Let's dig into what's happened with vulnerability. And then I want to get to this concept of availability, because to me, that was really true. And I think it can be for others.
And now you just made me connect transparency also. So transparency is to put the correct story on the fact that you might look, let's say you're there outside a window, you may look to this side every once in a while just to make sure they're actually getting unstuck. Right. That's transparency, to simply put the right story on what's happening. Mm. So that is different than vulnerability, but that transparency. So, yep.
Yep. So that's like what I said earlier to you. Hey, if you see me looking down, I'm just looking at my notes to make sure I'm asking the questions. I'm not checking Facebook.
Exactly. That transparency is super important when we're in boxes that we are trained to put story on. We watch movies and we watch television shows where we put story here. So we are overprogrammed to put story on here. And because we can't feel each other, we're making up for the visuals.
You don't know what I'm looking at. You don't know like where my eyes are going.
Not at all. Yeah. And as a trained actor, right, we're trained to stay on the camera. And that, and it's super weird. I'm looking at the camera. Am I looking at you? No, I'd like to.
No, this
here you are.
Camera.
Here. Yeah.
Looking at you.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'll often say, talk to the camera, listen to the box. So all those elements are a fascinating thing about what does it mean to be vulnerable in this world? And it's more than, it's an expansion into the business world, not only because of the time we're in right now. I want to say that it's been exponentially sped up, perhaps, or it has revealed some of the cracks in the concept. Vulnerable, as a performer, we are trained to be vulnerable. That is like, how do I, if I'm in a scene with you, I'm open to you, I'm connecting, we're figuring out what our character is and what part of me connects to the character, and we're here. And there's a fourth wall in theater. And even if we're breaking the fourth wall, we are still under imaginary circumstances.
Right.
Even if we're telling a story, even if we're doing stand-up, we're still, it's still imaginary circumstances that is different than you and I right now in a business meeting on Zoom, right? This is, it is a different world. So that vulnerability was a way of having us be open for our audience to be able to relate to us.
Okay.
I would often say we are breathing for an audience that's holding their breath, right? That was our, that we are there for them. We take that term vulnerability and we bring it to the corporate world or the business world, and we take it out of the boundaries that have been created. It's actors sometimes have a problem with that boundary, right? Am I in love with that person or is that in my scene? Like, what's going on? I mean, marriage is definitely broken up. Yes, it's, there are lots of things that have gone on there. In working with one of my colleagues, she and her students were exploring the fact that they felt like vulnerable had been sort of co-opted and transformed, transmuted into this, I'm sharing everything I have with you, almost as a power move, not trying to be, not, that wasn't the goal of it. It's like, I am really going to share everything with you in this new world, this new dynamic of, we want authentic leadership. We want to be transparent. We need to understand what's going on. Vulnerable is a tool that like grew in ways that I, and transmuted into ways that maybe are not as helpful. So this colleague and friend of mine was saying, we've been exploring the term available. And I just latched on and went, oh, it, you know, when you hear a reframing, you, your whole company's about reframing. So when there's a reframing that you're like, oh, yes, that's a reframe I can grab onto. So if vulnerable, and there are so many different elements around it, it has a power structure to it, you saying you would meet at a meeting and you'd be happy to share whatever. You also have gone through, I'm assuming, times in your life where there were pockets that you didn't feel like that little suitcase, not so much. What's interesting is the dominant culture, this is true with so many things, tends to feel more comfortable sharing because the stories and their vulnerabilities that they're sharing are part of the paradigm in which we're used to orbiting, existing. I'm mixing all kinds of metaphors here. We're used to being there. Yeah. So what happens is the people who are not in the majority, who have different life background, they came from a different, they have a different story, maybe. I mean, so many ethnicity, race, sexual orientation, all kinds of things change. There are those elements that may shift how comfortable, and I'm not always a fan of saying we need to be comfortable, how much we're willing to share. And I have story after story with individual clients coming through my brain right now where they felt like they were being asked to overshare from what their, this one person I'm picturing right now, her culture, that was totally wrong, right? It wasn't.
You didn't do that. Yeah.
So when we gave her the term available, she went, oh, now it's under my control. Mm. And I want a little side note. I am a big Brené Brown fan. I am a huge Brené Brown fan.
Like, it's not that I don't like Brené Brown.
No.
And I think she brought something to the conversation that we had been hiding and trying to avoid.
Totally.
Yeah, but I want to add something to that, though, because I think I was talking to, his name is Alex. I wrote about him in my book. He's been on my podcast. He's the head of innovation at Cisco Systems. Mm-hmm. Really cool guy. And one of the things in the more beginning of what was, I guess, 2020, did it happen? I don't even know. Suddenly it's March.
An accordion. Yep. Yeah. It went. Yep.
Right. Exactly. He was saying one of the things he's really loving about the virtual stuff, not COVID, but the virtual stuff, was that he was able to get to know his teams in a way that he didn't when they were in their cubes, because he saw their world.
Yep.
And that was sharing without control, because I had no option but to let you into my kids running around, my kitchen's a mess, I've got nowhere to work, so I'm at the dining room table, whatever, right? Because we had no choice. Suddenly we were all on Zoom or meetings without knowing even how to use it. So it seemed like we went through this tipping point where suddenly being vulnerable was forced onto us, and so much of it. So how do we, I guess my question is, whether you want, so I think that's actually, in some ways there's some good to that, because now, Hillary, I get to know you in the world that you live, and that's really cool.
Right. Except I have a background on right now, but yes.
Yeah, right, so do I. but this background tells you a little bit about what's going on in my world. I want to be in California right now, not
totally.
No.
Yes.
So, what was I going to ask her? How do you balance that? Because on one hand, this opening up that's happened, not by choice for many of us, has been a really great connector. Yet on the other hand, what I'm hearing, and I think what you're saying with your clients too, is like, well, where are the boundaries? How do I develop boundaries that work then?
Yep. And I think that it's so interesting when concepts exist in opposition at the exact same time, right? So yes, Alex is getting to know his team and that's fantastic. And yes, maybe some of those people didn't want to share in that way. He feels more connected to them. I was with someone who, the stories and the people sharing online with the horrible stories, but I had a client when their background went away, they had their laundry drying there because the only place they had was in there, right? And because of their power position in the company, which was a lower, so power comes from title. I mean, the way we talk about it comes from power and position. Title and position. Status is fluid, right? So they had low power and they were supposed to have higher status at this time. And that, boom, dropped it for them. They felt that way. And it depends who they were. So if Alex's laundry got shown, that might be funny because he was a boss, right? Or at a different, but and if it's-
I'm trying to prove myself.
It's a different, or I don't, that's a, I don't need you to know that. I had one leader who said, I just need to talk to you. I've never wanted to invite a single colleague into my home ever. And now they're all here.
Right. I've never had him over for happy hour for a reason.
Totally. And he's like, my home life is super private. So what happens is that vulnerable makes the standard sharing. Mm. And Alex saying, it's been great to get to know you. Now, Alex is awesome, I'm sure, right? Yeah. Has Alex asked, has he set the parameters? Hey, we're going to share where we are. Make sure you're somewhere where you can have your cameras on. Make sure that it's going to be okay. If you're not, please let us know what's going on. Let's be aware. I've had number of conversations about, and that's simply about sharing. We don't know what else is going on, what's happening. The classic stories. Yeah. People walking through. It just happened. It still happens. For me, if we go with Brené Brown and that idea, what you said was perfect. It's about us. We haven't opened up enough. We haven't unpacked that shame enough and to risk and be vulnerable and recognize that we're all human. There's so much great exploration there. That's about what we choose to share. Vulnerability should be about that. It has become about I'm going to share because that will show that I'm building trust. It's very one way, very monologue. The vulnerability has a monologue, available has a dialogue. This is what I'm deciding in relationship to you.
Oh my gosh. You just blew my mind with that. I love that. So, I'm like sitting over here looking, I'm super uncomfortable, by the way, Hillary, which I can't remember the last time on a podcast I was uncomfortable, because I mean, that's the space I play in. So congrats on that one.
Oh no. Is that because we're thinking about everything?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a really good thing. Cause I think that's where we learn, we stretch and grow. Yeah. So I'm going to be available for a moment, and I'm going to share just from my perspective, because I think we can all learn from it. So
yeah.
I'm just kind of coming to the realization that I don't think I'm an oversharer. Like I don't share. Have you ever met that person at a networking event and they share that thing that you're like, I don't even know what to do with that. The conversation's done. Like, oh God, what do I do? Like,
yeah.
I've had people share things with me that you're just like, and to your point, it's kind of a monologue because they're telling you and you're like, I don't even know. Like suddenly I'm a therapist. And I was like, I don't even know how that happened.
Yep.
So, but I do play in a space for myself that's probably more out there than a lot. Because it's what I do, right? It is my work. It's part of who I am. I don't think I'm an overshare, but I definitely am in that space of availability a lot, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
What you're making me realize is that just because I'm okay with it in this way doesn't mean everybody else is. And I'm kind of slapping myself virtually upside the head a little bit because I'm relating it to innovation. Like I talk about how I innovate is different than how you innovate. So I can't expect you to do it the way I do it. So I preach this all the time in innovation,
right?
But it just kind of came full circle to me of like, oh, this is also true.
Right.
When it comes to this available, vulnerable space that we're talking about. So how do I, as a leader, regardless of where I am. So that's just my personal realization of like, oh man, I probably make a lot of people really uncomfortable because I'm like, let's lean into it. And they're like, I'm not ready to lean in. Right. And my job is to push people, but from where they are. So, how do I, as a leader, how do I approach this in a way that drives the trust and the collaboration, the things we're looking for in the team without putting the pressure on and adding the consequences that we were just talking about?
So from years of working with youth who came with stories I didn't know about, we always created a culture of engagement, which is different than rules of engagement. You know what? This is all wordsmithing, right? Words are worlds though, right? It matters what words we use. So creating a culture of engagement and asking for that. So what do you need in order to do the work we're going to do? We are building trust and all that. What's one thing we need? What's the second thing? Like sometimes it'd be three. You can have a limited list. People call it a number of things. Culture of engagement is what I've been calling it for a number of years. From years ago when I was working with youth and have carried it into the corporate world, we don't always take the time to do it. And I think it's super helpful. Even if you say, okay, what two things before we dive into this intense meeting, what do we need right now? I need to be sure that you're okay. I need to be able to turn my camera off from time to time or whatever, right? People can say what they need. And I think two stories to the culture of engagement can be helpful to recognize, and you invite it. So you can't tell people what the culture of engagement is, right? It has to be guided.
I realize what I'm doing in an effort to push them forward. I think I'm missing
setting the rules.
Yeah.
Here are the boundaries and here are the rules. Now those are good also. So culture of engagement is slightly different than here are the rules of engagement in order for this to work. So that's like soccer, right? We have to have boundaries.
You can't just be one time, right? Yeah. I just talked over you when I did that too, which was awesome.
Totally. A couple stories are coming to mind. That one is I was working with a woman and she was a company that has these big events off campus, majority of people are super excited about it. There's alcohol involved, which is fun, and all these activities. And it's about getting to know each other. And this woman said, this is not why I came to work here. Now, you could say, wait a minute, what's the cultural fit? And we talk about a cultural ad or a cultural fit, all that stuff. So what we worked with her on was simply language. Because the world is moving more towards vulnerable, available, really working on that authentic thing, people are always saying, I want to talk to you casually. I want to use my casual language. So I have artificially delineated conversational from casual in order that some people have something that's their own. So how I speak to my immediate family, friends is casual. That's mine. Conversational, because the world is saying that's authentic and that's how we're communicating and that's our culture. We want to talk to our clients in that conversational tone, still professional. We needed to create that boundary. So sometimes we need to create new boundaries, right? Yeah, the idea was we're going to conversational. It's so much better. But this woman was like, and I simply let her be conversational and keep something to herself. then she felt safer and like she could go.
So what I'm loving about this, Hillary, and what I'm taking away from it, that I think makes people and myself more comfortable. And again, I'm okay being uncomfortable. So I like,
yeah,
you.
Rock the awkward.
Yeah. Like, right. And I don't think we can be comfortable all the time. And
no.
So
that's a whole nother topic I could get into. Around confidence. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that having some boundaries that I get to set for me,
yep,
allows me to show up in a stronger, better way. It doesn't mean, this is what I'm taking away from what you're saying, it doesn't mean that I am putting stuff in a vault that I shouldn't.
Right.
It simply means that I get to show up as my best self because I don't have to bring this, whatever this is, with me. I get to make that decision.
Yeah.
So we have a question from one of our Academy members, from Jeff here. So let me see. So he asks, I really want my team to feel more available. He put that in quotes with a happy face. We like that. But we're kind of coming off a culture that used to be really judgmental. So what do I do to help transition them to a place where they feel more comfortable being available in the way that works for them? I've got some baggage from a past leader that we're working through. So that's a great question.
That's great.
And I think whether that's not him, but whether that past leader is you and you're trying to transition it, or
right,
you've inherited a team, or you've got people with experience and other baggage, that happens all the time.
One of the first things I reframe for people is the term judgmental, because I think that judgment is good or bad. It's all of it, right? So we are train our children, you know, please use good judgment. And then we say we want a judgment-free zone. It is a little bit of a brain, like, right? So recognizing that we create story and we judge. That's our human beingness. That is our fabulousness. So understanding that there was a negative judgment, opening up. So I'm assuming, Jeff, that was what was connected, was a negative judgment. Opening up that judgment has this other side of it that is a very human quality, that we are judging whether things are safe or not all the time. So if you have in the past, so part of it is having that discussion. Let's unpack what happened with judgment. And I invite people to please don't say a judgment-free zone, because truly that sounds terrifying to me. It's human beings not thinking about.
It sounds like a lie, to be honest.
Whole, right?
You know, yes. It's like, okay.
Right.
Well, you're saying something else that I want to call out, because I don't want to brush past it too fast. You're saying, have that discussion around what it felt like. So I do think that sometimes when we try to transition a culture, and particularly when we're dealing with things like availability and judgment and kind of for whatever reason, it not being the best culture.
Yeah.
We miss the step of calling out the elephants in the room and saying, let's just recognize where we're coming from. So we know how to get to the next place. We just try to leap to the good place. And then that's where you get all the eye rolls and the, we're just going to wait it out. This is just another promise. I mean, the list goes on, right? So
I just
wanted to take a moment there because you said it, but I think it's a key to moving past it to get to the other stuff. So if I'm not saying judgment free, what am I, how do I
honor that we're judging? When did we not feel that it was in our best interest? When did it feel like a negative judgment? When did our body go, I'm judging, this is not safe? Like having a discussion around that, if we're transitioning. And I think that there are very few work environments that are comfortable. I just want to put that out there. Me on the couch watching Netflix, comfy. All right. But generally speaking, when we are in a work environment, we're maneuvering through things, it's often uncomfortable. And I think we put a little bit too much weight on trying to get things to be comfortable versus the classic line, let's get comfortable being uncomfortable, because we care enough to notice what's going on. So I applaud you for noticing, Jeff, like, okay, wait a minute. Now, how do I invite the questions to pick it apart, pull it apart, pick it apart, sounds bad, pull it apart, and then say, what can we shift now? If we've pulled this apart, this happened, we're all going to be judging, we're all going to be creating story. What do we need now in order to feel available? What boundaries? So then invite new boundaries in and invite that conversation, and even invite the elephants. What am I missing? What am I not seeing? With my workshops, I have them over there. We put an elephant in the middle of the table when we're in person so that people can grab it if they feel like there's an elephant that no one's addressing.
So, right. And there's all, and you know it, right? You can see it in the body language and the eyes. I mean, it's really, I think those elephants are actually kind of obvious.
Can I ask you, are they obvious that they're there? Are they obvious when they are? Because I feel like that's a big difference. I know there's an elephant. I don't always know what it is.
I'd say both.
Okay, good. Okay.
Sometimes, first of all, there's always elephants. I feel like there's always
elephants. Always. Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely.
A situation where there haven't, I'm just thinking, where there haven't been any elephants. Say it this way. Sometimes when I'm working with clients and we're kind of digging into that, so oftentimes when I'm brought in, it's to solve a problem, create a new product, right? Something. Right. But we have to start with getting the team to be innovators and to align. So there's kind of this pre-step. I think as an outsider coming in, I can probably see them easier than I can.
Right. Like you have little glasses on that are like letting you. Yeah,
but that's because I'm seeing having conversations and I'm seeing the patterns that they're too in the thick of it to see. And they're in it.
Yeah.
Yet if I were to turn that on to me, I'd say there's probably elephants on my team that I don't know.
Right.
Because I'm too much in the weeds. So that was a little bit of a nuanced answer, but I.
No, it's good.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit of both and it depends on the situation, but I think it's very easy to, as the leader in particular, when you're slightly removed, to not see the elephants, to know that there's some exist or not, but to really not know what they are.
Yeah. 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 Excellent clarification for me. That was really helpful. Yeah.
Well, I didn't really think about it because I don't think it's a one size fits all answer. I don't think, I don't think any of those situations, but I think the elephants matter. And I think even if you don't think there are any, I would venture to say there probably are, or at least stuff that people need to shed and say, I just need to have my voice heard in this part. So we have another question in, and I want to actually take the conversation here too. You said in the beginning, and I'm a big believer in this too, that disagreement is good. In fact, and for innovation, it's important because I think groupthink kills an idea. It waters it down. It doesn't actually help strengthen it. Disagreement does, but it has to be done in a very constructive way.
Yep.
How does availability and communicate the work that you do, how does that fit into having debate that's healthy and that isn't personal?
One of the biggest misunderstandings I think of life is that, you know, this is what you do. The greatest creativity happens within constructs, within boundaries. If I paint on a canvas, if I play soccer in a field, if I do improv with strong structure for the activities, we can play like crazy, right?
People think it's mutually exclusive, structure and innovation, but they actually foster each other. Yeah.
Yes. Availability is a shared ownership. Availability is a shared ownership of the boundary creating. Vulnerability tends to be, this is what I've decided. Not always, you know, it depends how we interpret those words.
Yeah, right.
And I feel like the vulnerability comes purposefully about self and about risk. Availability is about how are we going to build trust as a group together. So if grit creates a pearl, right? That classic thing, right? If we need that grit and that rubbing to figure out what's going on, then how do we create a group culture? How do we create it in a space that we can use? I mean, all those improv terms and all those facilitation terms, ouch, like, right? Some people have the ouch term. If something hits someone wrong, they just get to go, ouch, or they have something that they pick up that's like, ouch. And then we go, okay, wait a minute, how did that hit? And we can't overdo it. It's not to overdo it. It's simply to have ownership of it. When we don't own, so that is usually one of the group culture things that comes up. I will own my stuff and speak it when it's there. So if we are, I think that's it. The main thing is availability is group rules, sure. Not group think. Okay. Yep. So making room for that, right?
Yeah. I want to ask you a question about language in that. So I think sometimes we work too hard to be comfortable. So I got two, let me put two things in here because it'll make sense. First of all, when I watch football, I love football and I'm always very envious of the sidelines because they yell and scream at each other and then they perform at their best. And like, it's not taken personally. It's not. And sometimes I feel like if I could just vent a little bit, I'd probably actually do like, Hillary, if I could just tell you, I don't fucking like what you just did. Like, right. I think my, maybe we'd both be better, right? If I could just do that, where they, like, they do it on the football sidelines. Like, that's yes. what's happening.
So that's the group they have created, that the yeah. culture of engagement has created that that will happen and we'll let it go.
And it's not personal, right? It's about the performance on the field or on site, whatever. Yeah. So
I feel that way about feedback in general, right? I'm a theater person. Yeah. For heaven's sakes, give me tons of feedback because I believe it's towards the end goal. Sports are the same way. Feedback yeah. is towards the end goal and I trust and believe in that.
Yeah. So when someone says to me, I don't like that idea at all, like I'm like, yes, let's dig into that. Like, tell me yeah. why. But it can be very personal. On the flip side of that, I worked with a very large soda company, beverage company, and they decided to make disagreement comfortable. And I can tell by your face already, it's like a horrible idea. And so everything—
No. I'm more trying. My brain just went, no, it's just so yeah, good.
It doesn't work. Everything had a language to it. So for example, if you wanted to disagree, you'd go, I have a clarifying question. And there were other ones too, but that was my favorite. I have a clarifying question, which came across as, I don't like a damn thing you said, right? Like it was a veiled attempt to make people comfortable, but all it did was shut everybody down.
Because we're human beings. We're human beings and we have reactions to things, right?
We know what's happening, right? Like we know we have this set rules of language that we had to follow to make disagreement okay.
They codified it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it had the exact opposite effect on the ideation session we were in, and I'm sure in their day-to-day meetings. So I wanted to throw that out there because I think I wanted to ask your opinion on how you don't go too far on the other side, because I mean, look, I'm Israeli, so I'm like, let me get in your face. Let me tell you what I think. Right. And that's not comfortable for everybody, but I think that there's some real, maybe not in the way I do it all the time, but there's some real value in just saying what you think, you know? Yes. And I know that you have to have a culture where trust, and you know that, hey, Hillary's going to say that to me, but she's coming from a place that's trying to make us better. And I know that. So it doesn't matter what she says. So, but I wanted to get your perspective on that.
Oh my gosh. You just opened up a whole nother podcast. So for me, because the concept of Brené Brown, let's keep bringing her up, right? She talks about the rumble. So she created a rumble. Instead of making it comfortable, she created a rumble. Mm-hmm. So she created boundaries and a safer space. We could have a debate about safer and safe all too, right? We have created that place to be uncomfortable so that they could do that. When there's a different status in power, mm-hmm. you have to be super careful in the idea that it might not be your background. It might be that you're the boss and the owner, right? So it's a different thing. So status and power comes into play with that as well. And we don't know how people are responding. So I think that, oh gosh. And then I had a team last week who just totally unearthed or put a spotlight on, please. No one can say, I'm confused, right? That means I don't agree. Like they totally pulled that one out of the dark and said, this is a phrase people are using now for, I don't agree, right? Or whatever is like, they call BS on that one.
Understand.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. So I feel like we have in our world, Sunflower, it's the most hilarious thing, but you can just go when there's confusion or wait a minute, I'm comfortable, I don't know what's going on. We just go Sunflower and then we pause and suss out what's happening. It's usually around questions. I'm comfortable with conflict.
Yeah, I am too.
And not everyone is, and we don't know people's histories. So the thing is that how do we find that place? And can I say that people know my intention? Communication isn't about intention. Communication is about landing. So I've been saying lately that my intention's here and I sometimes land at a completely different airport than I was intending. And I'm like, how did we get over there? It's not what I meant at all.
Right.
So we can't argue intention. We can at home with our loved ones and it doesn't get far. We know that. So right. You know, that's not what I meant. And so how do we, to your point, how do we keep our edge? How do we keep our authenticity? How do we keep real conversations going without getting to the codified way of making it comfortable? How do we go, I'm uncomfortable and I'm still going to ask this question, and honoring the different levels of comfort, right? So some of it's my theater background, some of it, I don't know why I wasn't raised in a home where disagreement led to bad things. Some people, you heighten it, it goes right into their beingness and it leads to bad stuff.
Yeah.
So we have to, honestly, this is why it's tricky and confusing and you have to ask, and your status and power situation is different. I don't think there are any blanket rules. It matters on the group. And when we bring in all kinds of diversity, we have to be asking a lot of questions about intention and landing and where am I missing?
I will tell you, this is not for other people to share this way of doing things. I think you have to do the things in the way that works for you.
Yes. But yes.
Some of the best feedback I ever got when we do the 360 loop, when I was in a company, we do 360 leadership, is I continually got, with Tamar, you always know where you stand. Like, it was like, you always know if she's like happy with what you're doing, not happy and unhappy in the sense of like,
no, I know. Yeah.
Happy with you. Like, not like that. But just, and I really appreciated that because I, and they were saying it positively, but I felt like, okay, that's good. That means that I am being very honest and direct and clear with people, but at the same time, so that's great. But at the same time, kind of to the other side of it, like, I do feel like there's this over, and maybe the whole thing, maybe the whole problem is we're trying to make conflict comfortable and you cannot do that. Like, it's conflict for a reason. And again, constructive conflict, I'm not talking about.
Yep. We disagree.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think there, at least in innovation space, there are some exercises you can do to take, like, one of the things I love to do is we have people write ideas on sticky notes first. And that allows the introverts, the people who are more thinkers in how they innovate versus doers, have second. And then, but what we don't do is read them all in a circle, because then it's about me and you. We actually put them up on a wall. And then we're all facing the wall. We're discussing the stickies on the wall.
Yep.
And that takes me away from it being like Hillary's idea and I'm looking at you. And you can do that on Zoom and other stuff too. But I got a little bit off track there. But I'm fascinated by this kind of idea that we either have too little or too much. And we've got to find this place in between where that availability lives. So here's the question I got in. I got to track, Isabel, I did not miss your question. Another Academy member, she asked, I'm middle management on the team. We have a very receptive leader and team, but we definitely need to work on this. This shift in the last year has changed the dynamic to a little too vulnerable, in quotes. Mm-hmm. What can I do as someone in the middle to help move this conversation along and get us to a better place?
A couple thoughts came to me, so I'll bounce them off you tomorrow, and then you share your thoughts too. One is to say, I heard this weird lady talk, and she suggested this. I always say, use me.
I always throw the outside expert under the bus.
Totally do that. I heard this interesting discussion.
Actually,
totally throw the expert. Always do that. So bring it in and go, I have heard that because of where we are, vulnerable is showing up differently. I think we've gotten a good place. And it's a weird time.
But it's actually a very good strategy.
Yes. It's like, hey, I heard this. The other thing is to simply suggest, hey, today, could we add three... And maybe culture of engagement, boundaries, I'm trying to think of other words. I want to be in the room with all of you, so you're brainstorming words at me.
So
what besides rules or boundaries, what would be-
Agreements.
Hey, guidelines, what was that?
Agreements, guidelines.
Yeah, some agreements, guidelines. What if today, I'd love three things. I'm coming in and claim it for yourself. I'm coming in feeling a little raw. I'm feeling a little like overexposed. Can we just have three guidelines? Sometimes I call them bowling bumpers. Like, can we just have bowling bumpers so we're- aiming for the strike. Yeah. Because we can't always handle the gutter balls. Sometimes we're too exhausted to deal with that. And so bumpers can be handy.
Well, and I think to your point earlier, people are a little bit exhausted, overwhelmed, over it, done, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
We really have to recognize that while we're trying to push people. I want to kind of, just in the essence of time, I want to bring it full circle, because obviously you and I could just talk for 3 hours.
Easily. Oh my gosh, it's super, wow, I didn't pay attention. And I want to know if I answered your questions of your Academy people. If not, please have them connect with me.
Okay.
You know, ping me on LinkedIn or whatever. Say, that was so not the answer I was looking for. Whatever it is.
No, that absolutely did. I want to bring it full circle to availability. So if you could just once again, because we've covered a lot of ground here. Which is
awesome.
Just reshare your definition of availability and then just share from your perspective how that can make that concept of availability, how that can make, I think, both you as the individual and the team really stronger innovators and leaders.
Availability honors the relationship, honors the dialogue versus the monologue.
Mm.
Vulnerability is work we do need to do on our own and also in our intimate relationships. That's super important.
Yeah.
But our intimate relationships are different than our work relationships.
And we should keep that boundary, by the way.
Yes. Yes. Unless you co-own your business with your partner. It's even more confusing. We could talk about that. Yeah. So there you go. So we try and keep it too, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Availability is that understanding that it's about the relationship and therefore what are the agreements we have for being available and being able to own where I am able to go. And I'm being careful not to choose the term comfortable because I yeah. really think it's a way overused term. So it's not where I'm comfortable to go. It's where I'm able to go, want to go, and want from an enlightened place, not from a blocked, lacking self-awareness.
I want a coconut grande latte.
Right.
That's a want. And then,
yes. So available invites conversation.
So
vulnerable invites shock value sometimes.
Well, I love it because I think it really, it forces you and allows you at the same time. And I think, Hillary, that's really the power in what you're saying with available is it allows me to set boundaries and put stuff in my control, but it also forces me to step forward a little bit and maybe move forward to places that I wouldn't always be as, I hate to use the word, comfortable with, but need to go to move myself forward.
Oh, can I jump in? One more thing is I realize when you're talking about innovation and feedback, right? So one of the things that fascinates me is vulnerable is what we tend to make people who are receiving feedback be vulnerable, take it in. Then the people are like, right? And we train people on how to give feedback. We just wrote an article on this. What about we have to train people to receive feedback, right? So are you looking for an agreement? Are you looking for affirmation? Are you really looking for input, right? Are you looking for simply a decision? What do you when you ask for feedback or getting it, what are you looking for? So when I stand up and I have my post-its and we're talking about whatever, is like, do I want input or I'd want you to affirm what's going on? We need to be that self-aware.
Yeah.
The other thing is that our boundaries, people think that all of the decision-making is on the giver of feedback. I can say, yep, I'm ready. Give me one thing. You know what? No, actually, I don't feel like that. Tomorrow, you can give me one thing tomorrow. We can say, yeah, I'm ready for two things. Yes, if you write them down. Yes, we have to be able to set our boundaries for receiving feedback. And it's amazing to me how all the power is on the other side.
Yeah. So, wow. I don't even have like anything to add to that. That was so good. So I want to end on one other thing, Hillary, that has been rattling around in my brain this whole conversation, because I'd love to get your perspective on how to give someone this feedback or how to pull someone out or make them realize they're doing this. So one of the things I've seen a lot of recently is in the under the guise of vulnerability, I would say people have gotten sloppy. Now that's a judgment on my part.
Sloppy or sloppy? What'd you say?
Either or. Yes, I'll take both. Sloppy and sloppy.
Great.
And let me tell you what I mean by that. Again, that's a judgment on my part, right? Of how I'm perceiving them.
Right.
But I'll see them in meetings that are professional. Now you don't need to have your suit on. And I mean, I get that. But they are like on their couch, no lighting, cameras going up their nose.
Right.
The dog is running around in the background and they're not doing anything about it. Like fill in the blank, right? And it seems like you said kind of casual versus conversational. We're talking about words. But it seems like people are using vulnerability as a way to be lazy. And I don't know how else to say that without sounding kind of harsh, but that's what it feels like.
Inauthentic. And they'll say, I'm just being authentic. This is authentically me.
Yeah, right.
That's the other thing they'll say.
Do when you've got that, when you're dealing with that, and I'm sorry if you are that person out there, I want you to take this and improve, because the impression you're giving the other people is not good.
It brings us full circle to where we're talking about executive presence.
Yeah.
And the idea that if anyone, I don't know, shoots pool, I don't shoot pool, but it's okay. So if we shoot pool, you have a level where you shoot pool, right? Sitting on the couch, lying, whatever, that same, if we're equating that.
Yeah.
If you truly want to show up and elevate your skills, it matters how you are being heard and seen. It is easier.
Yes.
It is faster if we align our value with the package we're coming in, with the energy, with the messaging. It's harder for me to understand the value you offer when you show up that way. I want to see your value. And not everyone can see through it. I was talking with a leader the other day and they said, I work really hard at not worrying about how someone is presenting. I'm really listening to their message. And I'm like, that's great. you're definitely missing things. If you're working that hard on hearing the message, they could up their, without losing their authenticity, up their levels of presentation without being fake in order that you, and be more efficient with their language, be clearer with their messaging, make it so that their ums aren't there so you don't have to edit them out. The reason ums are a problem, for instance, it's totally, I use this as an image, is not because it makes us look bad. It's because it's exhausting for your audience. So I'm going to bring everything back to the audience. Slobby and sloppy, I'm going to suggest, Mara, the reason you feel it is because you know that people are missing their value. They are not showing up to their audience the way. It's sort of about them. It's truly that it's too exhausting for whomever they're speaking to find out the value they're bringing.
So I feel much better about my own thoughts now because I'm always like, put your stuff together. What are you doing? But you're right. It's like, I can't even hear what they're saying because of how they're showing up.
Too much translation.
Yeah. And to hear it, I have to work really hard. Like I really have to bypass the, you know, dirty t-shirt that they're wearing. But I think it's under this veil, to your point, of authenticity and vulnerability, but it's not. It's not helping them. Maybe it is, but it's not helping them.
There is, this is a whole other thing that gets tricky, because when I first started doing this work, I'm like, oh, we are deeper than that. People are more than how they show up. Human beings are visual. Yeah. And what I say is, of course, we judge a book by its cover. That's why people design book covers.
Well, it's just human nature. That's how we are, right?
Right. And we are. And we're trying to see. It's why I want to connect with that person or whatever it might be. Why don't we make it easier instead of harder to connect with people? And that's one of those things. So I'm going to have you reframe your guilt at feeling like you're saying, is it just surfacey, to go, I believe in them and their value is not being seen. You want them to show up more so that you can see them.
So thank you for that. And what a great way to talk to somebody about it, just to say, hey, like, I want your value to show up and it's not. And here's what, you know, and here's why. Yeah. So, oh my God, Hillary. Okay. Where can people go to connect with you, learn more?
So there's my company, Articulate Real and Clear. So connect with me on LinkedIn. We have our website, and our website is articulaterc.com. So for the Real and Clear. Yeah. And connect with me on LinkedIn. Join me in Clubhouse. I mean, I have two rooms in Clubhouse and we talk about a number of things. Anywhere, please find me and please challenge me on things. I'm a big grit. Grit makes the pearl.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Hillary, this has been phenomenal. We'll put all those links in the show notes.
Thank you.
Like I said, I was getting really uncomfortable there for a while. So I think that's a good thing.
Awesome. You know what? I live in that place because I'm always thinking about everything constantly. I've had to keep thinking about how we talk about what we do because the world keeps changing. And I had a huge aha this weekend. So it's constant, right? Constant iteration to figure out how to be clear in what we're saying and not offend. I've offended someone. Guaranteed I've offended someone, right? I offend myself, right? So check in with me and help me talk it through and figure it out. And
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.